Just give him a little praise. Yeah, he deserves it. Yes, he does. And what can separate us from the love of God? Not height, not depth, not principalities, not angels, not depth, not the ocean, not the air, not the sky, not the sea, not you. What can separate us from the love of God? Nothing can separate us from the love of God that God's given us through Christ Jesus. And boy, it was a marvelous mess when it happened, is all I can tell you. Yeah, you'll see it today. Thank you, Isaac. I appreciate that so much. Yeah, you'll see it today because we're going to be looking at Luke 15. Let me just tell you just kind of a little breach into Luke 15 just 1 second before we even read a passage or anything. Luke 15 is a single parable. Now, I know that most people read Luke 15. How many of you have ever read Luke 15? Or you even know what I'm talking about? Okay. Luke 15. How many of you have ever heard the parable of the prodigal son? Where the boy leaves home, gets his money, wasted on riotous living, and then comes back and dad takes him back in. That's the parable of the prodigal son. That's in Luke 15. As a matter of fact, that's the last part of Luke 15 and the biggest story in Luke 15. But there are two more before that. One is about a man with 100 sheep, and one is about a woman with 10 silver coins. And this is a tremendous passage in the Word of God because of what it does and what it says and what it shows us about Jesus and the grace of God. This is a passage that is that's probably been preached about. It's more the prodigal son's probably one of the greatest illustrations that teachers and preachers use anywhere to illustrate the fact that God does not stop loving you, that God does not stop pursuing you, that God does not stop wanting you and making provisions for you in life, because God is like the father that's waiting just to see the boy appear on the horizon out there. But it's much more than that, because this passage is a passage about a passage of correction, let's just say it that way. A passage of correction. Because we're filled in a land in these days, just for a little context, we're filled in a land in these biblical days with a group of pastors, if you will. Preachers, deacons, elders, Torah teachers, you know, Sunday school teachers in the church of that day called the synagogue. And this group of professional religious people were much like professional religious people today. And it's their occupation, it's their job, it's their livelihood. It's what they do. It's the essence of their life. And so to them, there's nothing greater than the synagogue. There's no greater place to be. There's no greater opportunity to be than to be at synagogue and to hear the teachings of the books of Moses, which I've written in your notes. It's called the Torah. It's the first five books of the Bible, Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy. And these are the books of the law, and they were taught very, and you know, no pun intended, but definitely pun, they were taught religiously, yeah. They were really taught provocatively, religiously, from the time these young Jewish people could walk until, you know, they got old enough they didn't come to synagogue anymore. And so the synagogue leaders were all annoyed and upset and aggravated and angry, because Jesus had started attracting a crowd of people. People started following Jesus. May I say to you that if you were alive then, that you would have been very much attracted to Jesus and the teachings that he had. You would be very much attracted to him just personally as his nature and his essence and his spirit and his personality and his gifts just march before you. You would be like them. You would just want to hear Jesus talk. It doesn't matter what you talk about. Just talk about anything, Jesus. Tell us that one again about when that boat was out on the water. Yeah, that's a good. Tell us again about that. I mean, they just followed Jesus everywhere. They didn't care what Jesus was teaching. They didn't care what he was saying. They didn't care where he was going. They didn't care that it was supper time or lunchtime or, you know, or breakfast. They just wanted to follow Jesus. Jesus had to get out in boats to get away from them, to push out from the land because they crowded in so tight. Yeah. Jesus had to escape to a mountainside somewhere and slip away almost in the night so he could be private and by himself because the sinners love Jesus. It wasn't the sinners that had a problem with Jesus. It was the clergy that had a problem with Jesus. It was the pastors, the priests, the deacons, the elders, and the Torah teachers that had a trouble with Jesus. Not the sinner. The sinners loved Jesus. The sinners invited Jesus to their wedding, like the first miracle he did was at a wedding, in the wedding of Cana of Galilee, where some little couple, they're not even named, so we know that's not the important part of the story, that he went to a wedding. I mean, that just happened to be an event, and the couple we don't even know, so it's not who he went to see, so that's not the important thing. The important thing is that Jesus was invited by somebody to come to his wedding. Hey, Jesus, will you come to our wedding? We're having our wedding next Friday night, and you know it won't be the same without you, Jesus. We want you to come to our wedding. Would you come to our wedding? And Jesus shows up at the wedding, and he performs his first public miracle at a wedding, the wedding in Cana of Galilee, where he turns water into wine and saves the best for last. Yeah, that's Jesus. That's Jesus. That was how Jesus was. And so by the time we get to Luke 15, I want you to see what's happening here in the first verse. Now, the tax collectors and sinners were all drawing near to him. I don't know what it was like to be a tax collector in Jesus' day, but I can say this one thing about tax collectors. They must have been the sorriest people on the face of the earth, because every time the Bible wants to illustrate something that's really low, they call it a tax collector. Anytime you're called a tax collector, that was like the biggest insult that could be laid upon you in biblical days. And it was these old wicked, evil, reprobate tax collectors that were following Jesus around. Oh, no, Jesus was not pursuing the tax collectors. They were pursuing him. They were looking for him. They were trying to find him. He wasn't out holding rallies for tax collectors and saying, okay, all you tax collectors, I'll give you a rebate if you come down here and listen to what I'm saying. No. They initiated the following. They were looking for Jesus. They followed him everywhere. And sinners. I don't know what sinners were as compared to others, but man, they must have been bad. Because the scribes and Pharisees and teachers and elders and deacons, and they were looking at Jesus and accusing Jesus, these tax collectors and these sinners just follow you around, man. You're collecting quite a motley crew over there. And it really offended them. The people that were coming to Jesus offended them, because they're not our kind of people. They're not synagogue people. You know, everybody has their place, right?
Right.
And everybody has to know their place.
Yeah.
And when you go to another place, you have to act like you're supposed to act and talk like you're supposed to talk and dress like you're supposed to dress and be something that you're not in order to fit in, right? That's the way the game is played. Mm-hmm. But these guys weren't playing any games. They were just who they are. And they were following Jesus, and it offended and it angered, and I'm sure promoted some jealousy among these pastors, that these people gladly came to hear Jesus teach and preach, but they never darkened the door of the synagogue. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. They never came to hear those guys preach. Mm-hmm. They didn't care what those guys said. They were never at synagogue. And now the pastors are looking at Jesus and saying, Jesus, why is it that those guys come to hear you preach all the time and will follow you anywhere and will give themselves? I mean, look, you don't even try. They just follow you everywhere, but they won't ever come down to hear us. And Jesus said, there's a reason for that. And he's going to share the reason. Look at verse 2, though. And the Pharisees and the scribes grumbled, saying. Now, see, you would think it would be a positive thing if bad people came to listen to Jesus. You would think that that would be what you want to happen, right? I mean, you want people who need the Lord to come to the Lord, right? I mean, people whose lives need to be affected by Jesus. Wouldn't it be a good thing for them to come to Jesus? That would be the first step in anything great happening in their life. So you would think it would be great. But now look, the scribes and the Pharisees are grumbling about the fact that these people are pursuing Jesus, and they're making accusations about him. I mean, look at the accusation. This man receives sinners. And if you can believe this, and even eats with them. Holy. Can you believe that about Jesus? What they were saying is, Jesus, look, these people are not our kind of people, right? And if you're the Messiah that you claim to be, these people cannot be your friends. These people have to change. You've got to fix these people. Yeah, these people are messed up. These people are wicked and evil. These people are the outcast of society. These are the misfits and the outsiders and the outcasts and the reprobates of society around here. And look, Jesus, you got, if they're going to follow you, how are you going to fix them? How are you going to change them? I mean, it doesn't appear that you're doing anything to encourage them to change their life, because you're receiving them. You're not putting down any rules and saying you got to change before you follow me, or if you're going to follow me, you got to put these kind of clothes on, or if you're going to follow me, you got to talk these ways and leave those words at the door. And no rules, Jesus. You're just receiving them, and by receiving them that way, you know what you're doing? You are encouraging them that they're okay. You're actually saying to them by deed, you don't have to change. You can come to me just like you are. And Jesus, we don't like that. Because you see, we have a system here. We have an order here. Our whole lives are based on people that fit the system and fit the order. And our whole culture and our society and our community is set up on the fact that people do certain things to gain certain things and to live certain ways and to be certain ways and to have certain things. And Jesus, you're messing up the system. You're receiving sinners and you're eating with them, which is a very intimate act. It's a very intimate social activity. You know it is. When you get invited over to someone's house, that's special, isn't it? Yeah, that's those people saying, hey, we like you, and we think you're our kind of people, and we would like to fellowship with you. That's when you're invited over to eat, it's a compliment. It's a social interaction that is an intimate social interaction. And it says, we're for you. You're our people. Hey, we're comfortable with you. You're great. And Jesus is eating with these people. Jesus is trying. Jesus is saying stuff to these people that doesn't need to be said, and we're all hot about it. And he's got to stop this mess because he's messing everything up. Doesn't he know that he's not supposed to do that with those people over there? Why do they even like him anyway? So Jesus sets out in three stories. It's one parable. I mean, it has one meaning. All three stories have one meaning, but there are three different stories that make up this one single parable where Jesus shares with the pastors and the scribes and the leaders and the teachers and all the, why sinners love him and don't love them. Why these people are willing to listen to him and go anywhere. They don't even know him. And they're willing to do anything for Jesus. They'll go anywhere for Jesus. They'll follow Jesus anywhere. And they never darken the doors at the synagogue. Jesus said, there's a reason for that. Let me tell you what it is. And so Jesus sets out three parables to tell them how the church that he is establishing, he is there to establish, how it operates with people, so that the people that need the Lord find the Lord, want the Lord, and have the Lord minister in their life. And the first story is a story about a man with 100 sheep. And when he comes home, so he told him this parable. What man of you having 100 sheep, if he has lost one of them, does not leave the 99 in the open country and go after the one that is lost until he finds it? Now, I'm not going to break down totally everything about them, because there's going to be four or five more messages about all these different stories and everything about it. And you'll see everything that Jesus did. And it's unbelievable what Jesus is doing here, by the way. But just the surface level little stuff today. Here's a man who has 100 sheep, and he's counting. He's out in the field and he's counting his sheep. And he gets his sheep counted and he says, "Man, I'm missing one of these sheep." Now, it's amazing, first of all, that a guy can count 100 sheep by himself. I mean, I'm just thinking, I've never been a shepherd in my life, but I'm just thinking, you know, sheep are dumb and they meander everywhere, you know. And while you're counting them, they're meandering, and it's like, okay, 75, 76, 78, 82, 83, 84, what? Wait, weren't you? You were over there. No, wait. In other words, to me, it would be difficult to count 100 sheep just by yourself out there with them meandering, wandering around. But he does, and he has 99. Now I'm thinking, all right, 99's almost 100, right? 99's real close to 100, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Well, you know, so we're missing one sheep. I mean, come on, I might have miscounted anyway, you know, I might have, because, you know, they're, who knows, I might, and so my tendency would have been to let it go, you know, call it good, name, all the sheep, you know, 99, that's real close, almost, but this man doesn't do this. This man does something that seemingly is irresponsible. Look at what this man does. This man leaves the 99 and goes away to find the one. Now, financially, that doesn't make a bit of sense. It's irresponsible financially, because you mean you're going to leave 99 sheep unattended? What if a wolf comes? What if a predator of any kind comes? What if they just wander away and get lost while you're out there trying to find them? I mean, you see what? It just doesn't really seem to be a responsible thing to do to leave 99 in the hand to go chase one that's wandered off in the bush. And how did this sheep get lost anyway? He just wandered off, dumb, just dumb. He was careless, or he was reckless, or he was, he wasn't paying attention. He was foolish. I mean, the sheep got lost because this sheep just wandered away from the rest of them somehow, all by himself. So he got himself lost out there. It wasn't the fault of the shepherd or the man. I mean, so why leave the 99 and go out there and try to find one little lamb? What difference would one make? And he searches until he finds it. You see that, right? He doesn't stop searching when it gets difficult. He searches until he finds it. And when he has found it, he lays it on his shoulders, which is a remarkable place to be, by the way, you'll see. And he starts rejoicing. And when he comes home, he calls together his friends and his neighbors, saying to them, "Rejoice with me, for I have found my sheep that was lost." So his sheep gets lost. He searches for the sheep. He finds the sheep. He brings the sheep home and he calls in all of his friends and the people that love him and say, "Let's have a party, man. I found my lost sheep. Glory to God. It's something worth celebrating." And then he adds this little line, "Just so I tell you, there'll be more joy in heaven over one sinner who repents than over 99 righteous persons who need no repentance," which is a slap in the face, by the way. You'll see. You know, that's a slap right there to the religious teachers. It's basically saying, and I'll just give you a little honey of that. But basically he's looking at him and he's saying, and he's sarcastic. He's saying, "Oh yeah, you know, it's more rejoicing over one sinner that comes to God than 99 who have no need to." You know, in other words, there's nobody that doesn't need to come to the Lord. You can't find one person that doesn't need the Lord, one person that's righteous enough to dodge Jesus, much less 99. You think you don't need Jesus, you know. I mean, he's just killing them. But a lot of stuff like that. But so there's your first story. There's your first little thing. Why do people come to Jesus and they don't go to synagogue? Jesus says, because I'm like a man who has 100 sheep. You know Jesus is the man, don't you? Right? That goes and pursues. Jesus said, let me tell you why. Because I'm like that man right there. Here's the second story. A woman with 10 silver coins. 10 silver coins, by the way, was a very common thing in Jesus' day. As a matter of fact, some biblical historians tell us that women who were unmarried, now, you know, I'm not verifying this, but I've just read it in biblical historical information, that women who were available to be married wore a head dressing with 10 silver coins in that head dressing, kind of like a little dowry, I guess, you know, like say, hey, you know, I'm not completely broke, I do have 10. That can be yours. Right. Each coin was considered in Roman coinage, like a drachma, which I know that means nothing to you, but let me just say that it would be the common wage. It would be the what a minimum wage worker would work a day for would be a drachma. So each one of these coins would be like a day's wages each day. So she has 10 days' wages, which is not very much, right? That's really not, this is not a rich woman, right? This is a poor woman. This is a normal, average person right here that's not married. No mention of a husband and anything like that. She's in a house, lives in a house by herself. And notice what happened. Now, let me just say this to you, and you'll see it when I get on this one a couple of weeks from now. But it is an insult to these religious people for him to even use this woman as an illustration. Not only is what he's saying personally tough on them and blasting them in every way in their prejudices and their all of their beliefs and their crazy and their restrictions and regulations and rules and so forth, by the way, which Jesus was going to come in direct conflict with the system, because Jesus did not come to be a part of the system. Jesus came to destroy the system. So sure, he was going to run headlong into the system. That's what he was trying to do. And he uses this woman as an example, and in everything about this woman is an offense to the system. But anyway, we'll look at that later. Here she is. Or what woman, having 10 silver coins, if she loses one coin, does not light a lamp and sweep the house? Now, just an implication here for you. She thinks she's lost it in the house. I mean, you don't light a light and start sweeping the house unless you think you lost it in the house, right? Now, I'm thinking like, okay, if it's in the house, you'll find it. I mean, just relax. Because if it's in the house, sooner or later, you're going to run up on it. I know most people aren't aware, but houses in biblical days, they didn't have like slabs poured like this. They weren't even. They weren't, you know, they were in mountainous areas. A lot of people were very, very poor. A lot of people lived in caves that were hewn out of rocks, and so we had uneven floors, and some of them had stones that had been brought in and they'd just been laid down, and you know, no mortar mix or anything like that. So there were cracks between some of the floor stones and so forth. And it was easy. As a matter of fact, a lot of archaeologists are able in these digs that they're doing nowadays to find what kind of civilization they're digging in by finding the coinage in some of these floors between the cracks in these rocks that were just put together like that, and uneven surfaces and so forth. And so it wasn't, what I'm saying, it wasn't really all that uncommon to drop something on the floor and not be able to find it. That's what I'm trying to say to you. And especially a coin that could roll somewhere and get in a crack and all, you know, I mean, in other words, good night, man. It might take a long time. If you're set on finding this thing right now, it might take you a long time to find it. But if you'll just take it easy, maybe you'll stumble up on it here in a little while, you know? But she doesn't. She's not, no. She's not taking it easy. Now it's not that big a loss. How much? One day's pay? One day's salary? Well, you can go out and work some overtime and make some one day's salary. I mean, we do, don't we? Right? Right? Yeah, we do. We stupid and we lose some money somehow. I don't know why. Isn't that what we do? We say to ourselves, well, hey, I'll just work some overtime. Yeah. Well, that's what she could have done, but no, look at her, what she did. It says that she got her light, which would have been a little lamp, a little oil lamp, and this would have been the way she would be looking, because the little oil lamp would just have a little oil wick burning, and she, this is the way she would be walking around her house looking with that oil lamp, just like that. Whew. Try it. That's kind of stressful. And she had her broom and she'd be sweeping. And it said, and she sought diligently. That means that she tore her house up. It means she ransacked the place. That means she moved the couch. By the way, we lost some keys this past week, our house. I'm going to just tell you this in case it ever happens to you. You'll know where to search, all right? Go right here first. All right, we knew the keys were in the house. Big set of keys, too. I mean, it wasn't like just one little key. It was like a whole key chain, key links, and it had these new fobs for the new cars, you know, that you can't crank without them and all that. Anyway, so it was a big little deal. You know, it wasn't tiny. And so we looked everywhere in the house. It was not in the house. We got in on the couch and we dug our hands down, you know, beside the couch like that. And we have one couch that has a recliner on each end. And so, you know, we dug our hand down in there and dug down, and because you couldn't just take the cushions off. And then the other one, we could take the cushions off. We took them all, threw them on the floor, looked all under there, looked under beds, went outside, looked in the flower beds. I mean, just everywhere. We thought the baby could have got it, you know, and took it somewhere and put it in a garbage can. We emptied all the garbage cans out. Now that is diligent right there. That's diligent. This woman swept behind the refrigerator. She moved the TV. I mean, she did everything. She ransacked her place looking for that one. She expended more energy looking for that coin than it would have taken to work some overtime and make enough money to replace the coin. But she was after it. Well, let me just tell you where ours ended up being. It ended up being when you, on the recliner, on these couch recliners, they have some fabric underneath the backside of it so that whenever the chair goes back like this, you know, the fabric stays extended down the couch. Keys were in that fabric back there. They were down in there, and then they, when somebody went back, leaned back, they fell back into that little pouch back there where all that was back there. That's where they were. Yeah, yeah. You know where we found them? The last place we looked. It better be the last place. I can't imagine looking for them after you find them. But anyway, they were in the last place we looked, right? Okay, so Jesus says now, all right, the reason that they come to me and they don't come to you is because I'm like a man who has 100 sheep and loses one and searches until he finds his lost sheep. I'm like a woman that has 10 coins and she loses one of them and she's so diligent that she just searches and searches until she finds that one lost coin. And then it says, and when she had found it, she calls together her friends and neighbors saying, "Rejoice with me, for I have found the coin that I had lost." Just so I tell you, let me stop there 1 second. Just notice there's a party at the end. There was a party at the end of the first one, right? Called all the friends in and said, "Let's celebrate, man. Let's get happy. Let's rejoice. Let's be glad. Be glad with me. Get the hooter out, or, you know, the horn and the tooter and all the rooter. And let's blow that thing and let's have some party and dancing and music around here because it's time to celebrate." And then when this woman finds the coin, she does the same thing, calls all her buddies in. And as a matter of fact, you know, she has a party. And I just thought about it thinking, that party probably cost more than the coin was worth that they had that they searched for, right? I mean, you see how illogical this is, how unreasonable. It just doesn't make sense what these people do. In these stories are just kind of, you know, out there a little bit. And then he says, "Just so I tell you, there is joy before the angels of God over one sinner who repents." Now, I know what you're thinking, and I'm going to just tell you that your thinking is not right. You're thinking that that who is rejoicing in the presence of the angels are saved people in heaven. That's what you're thinking, but that's not right. And I'll tell you when we get there who that is. All right, the third story is a story by far the longest of a father that has two sons. I've always called, well, not I, but the Bible calls them a younger son and an older son. I call them a dumb son and a smart son. He has two sons, which is not unusual. Let's read the story. And he said, there was a man who had two sons, and the dumb one of them said to his father, Father, give me a share of property that's coming to me. Now, just so you'll know, this was a supreme insult to his father. This was the son coming to the father and saying, Dad, I can't wait for you to die. Can't wait for you to die. I know when you die, I'm going to get some of this land and some of this money and some all this stuff around here. And I'm ready for you to die right now because I can't wait to get my inheritance. I want my inheritance right now. I'd like to have it right now. So I probably would look at him and say, well, I can make sure you die right now. But anyway, the dad gave him, he divided his property between them. And not many days later, the younger son, the dumb son, gathered all that he had and took a journey into a far country. And there he squandered his property in reckless living. And when he had spent everything, a severe famine arose in that country, which is what usually happens when you have done all of the craziness that you can do, right? Well, I mean, you know, as long as you got money, you got friends, right? As long as you got money, you got resources, you got party time, you got people hanging on, you got people saying, let's go down the store, buddy, let's get some of this, let's do that, let's move here, let's walk there, let's go. I mean, they're all over you. But when you have finally spent everything you have, they leave you, right? There's an example, and he began to be in need. And he went and he hired himself out to one of the citizens of that country who sent him into his fields to feed pigs. You can imagine a Jewish boy even to be associated with the word pig. Boy, he's really hit rock bottom, hadn't he? Feed pigs? A Jewish boy feed pigs? Come on. And by the way, that's all the devil has left for you. Hopefully. When the devil gets through with you, he say, you think you something. You think you big shot. You think you foot loose and fancy free. You big something. I'm telling you, when the devil gets through with you, he's going to send you out there and say, feed pigs. Because that's the only thing the devil has to offer you. He gives you the good stuff first and saves the worst to last. God gives you the worst stuff first and saves the best for last. That's all I'm saying to you. The devil has no happy old men, okay?
All right.
Into his fields to feed the pigs. And he was longing to be fed with the pods that the pig ate, and no one gave him anything, which is what you have to do. If you had given him something, he would never have come to himself. If somebody said, here's a moon pie and an RC, he would still be in the pig pen. The reason he came to himself is because nobody gave him anything. And I'm going to tell you something. Having nothing is a startling reality. Having no future, no hope, no life, no nothing, that'll wake you up. But we're so frazzled and dysfunctional, we'll keep funding rebellion of our people. You know, it's crazy, right? I'm paying money so you can rebel against God. I'm keeping you a house and food and car and all that so you can rebel against God. I'm paying your way while you do it. He's never going to come back. Remove all that stuff. No man gave me. Anyway, I'm meddling. All right, Mel. All right, he came to himself, and here's what he said. But when he came to himself, he said, how many of my father's hired servants have more than enough bread, but I perish here with hunger? I will arise and go to my father, and I'll say to him, Father, I've sinned against heaven. See, he even practiced what he was going to say. Which he knew this is what he knows about himself. He knows this about himself, and he's practicing saying it so when he meets his father, he can sound natural when he says it, right? So he's saying, all right, let me get my speech down. All right, what I'm going to say to Dad when I go back, and I'm going to say, Father, I have sinned, and I've sinned against you, and I'm not worthy to be called your son anymore. I insulted you. I took my inheritance, Dad. I'm so sorry. I was so stupid. But Dad, so I know I'm not worth being a son anymore, but if I could just work for you, Dad, can I have a job? Can I just work for you? Because you take good care of your people that work for you. And I'm dying out here, Dad. Can I come back with a job? I'll live in the bunkhouse. I know I'm not a son anymore. I'm not worthy of a son. That's what he was practicing. I'm no longer worthy to be called your son. Treat me as one of your hired servants. And he arose and he came to his father. But while he was still a long way off, his father saw him. A long way off. That means Dad's looking for him, right? All right. Yeah. Yeah, he didn't walk up on the porch, knock on the door, and dad say, "Oh, Bubba, where you been, man?" Yeah. No. The boy was a long way off. That means dad standing out on that porch looking for him. Probably went out there every afternoon and said, "Boy, I wish Bubba would come over that horizon there. I hadn't heard anything from my boy. I know he's dead out there somewhere. Man, I'd like to see him again." And all of a sudden, one day, here comes Bubba over the horizon. Dad jumps off the porch, hightails it down there to where Bubba is, and Bubba's going to give him his speech. Bubba, you know, he practiced it. He's going to give him his speech. And he arose and came to his father, but while he was still a long way off, his father saw him and felt compassion and ran and embraced him and kissed him. Now, I'm thinking that this meeting right here deserves at least one "I told you so," right? Yeah. I mean, when he runs out there to meet him, you would think that at least one time dad would say, "Boy, I just want you to know I told you so. Come over here and give me a hug." But no, he didn't give him any "I told you so's" or anything. He just fell on him and he kissed him and he hugged him. And the son said to him, here's his speech: "Father, I've sinned against heaven and before you, and I'm no longer worthy to be called your son." But the father said to his servants, the dad didn't even respond to the son. The dad said, like he didn't even hear what the boy said. The boy said, "Dad, I'm sorry, I sinned again." And the dad says, "Hey, you guys, bring out, get a ring. Yeah, we're going to give him some new jewelry." Now, we're not going to discipline him. We're going to give him new jewelry. We're going to give him a new robe. We're going to give him new shoes to put on his feet. That's what we're going to do. Yeah. We're going to give abundantly, even though he doesn't deserve it. He deserves to be disciplined. Any dad would say that. Any of you would say that. Yeah. You would say, you can't let that boy come back like that with no discipline. What if he does it again? He's got to learn, right? We punish people that sin against us, that do bad things, because we don't want that to happen again. But not this dad. This dad puts on new clothes, new jewelry, new shoes, and says, "Let's kill the fatted calf and have a party, because my son, I thought he was dead and he's alive again. I thought he was lost and now he's home. So get out the fiddles and get out the bowls and rosin up everything. And let's have a hoedown, baby. You know, it's time." And everybody was happy except one. I'm not going to read the rest of the story. I will about 5 weeks from now. But there is some more to this story, by the way. And it's on there for a purpose. And the purpose, well, never mind. I'll tell you what the purpose is. So here's Jesus. Jesus says, "Hey, you want to know why they come to me and avoid synagogue? Check out these three stories. I am the man with 100 sheep. I love illogically like the man with 100 sheep." Now, doesn't make sense. It's illogical. Who does that? Who does that? God does. "I am the woman with the 10 coins. I spend recklessly for people." Who does that? Who is illogical and reckless? God is. Jesus said, I'm the father that had the two sons. And I give abundantly for people. Who does that? Who brings them in and loves them in spite of what they did and unconditionally receives them into their life and just treats them as if they had not done wrong and receives them into the family and welcomes them with a new ring and a new robe and new shoes and says, "Come on in, son. I thought you were dead, but now you're alive." Who does that? God does. Because that's who God is. And Jesus said, the reason that they come to me and they don't come to you is because that's the way I am. I receive people illogically. I pursue people relentlessly. I treat people, I give abundantly. I'm reckless with my gifts and in order for people's lives to be affected by those things. And all three of these stories follow a pattern. Same pattern in all three stories. Something's lost. That which is lost is searched for. That which is searched for is found. And that which is found is celebrated. All three stories, something got lost. They went and searched for it. They found it. And then when they found it, they all rejoiced and celebrated the fact that that which was lost is now found. What is the implication of this? What is Jesus saying about this? Jesus is saying, this is the way I am. And you might say, yeah, that's the way Jesus is, all right. That's the way God is, yeah. Well, that's who we're supposed to be reflecting. That's what we're supposed to be like. That's how we're supposed to be. That we would be illogical in our search and pursuit and spend whatever it takes to reach and give more than we have to make a difference and rejoice and celebrate when that which was lost is found. I mean, come on, guys. That's why sinners loved Jesus and rejected the synagogue, because the synagogue was not like that at all. And so if this is what we're to reflect, I put those four sentences at the bottom of your page. And let me just make one little preface, and I promise you we're going to be through with this in just a minute, all right? I hear you laughing. All right. I need to get a water for a second. Our sponsors. Yeah, all right, there we go. Mm-hmm. Got to show them drinking it during service. All right. Let me say this to you. And I'm not trying to be ugly, and you know I love every one of you, right? Is there anybody here that thinks that I don't love you? That you're not special to me? You know better than that. You're the main one. So I'm not saying this out of malice or anything. I'm just wanting us to think about this. Think about this. We meet every week to celebrate. Every service we have on Sunday morning, you're sitting right now in a celebration service for that which was lost and is now found. And you know what we're celebrating? We're celebrating the fact that we know what it feels like to be lost, and we know what it feels like to be found. And we're so excited that we're found, we're celebrating the fact that not only are we found, but that the other people around us are found. And here's the only little deal I want to say to you about this. We can celebrate so long with the same people that we can forget why we're celebrating in the first place. You see what I mean? I mean, if we don't search and we don't find and we don't bring and we don't... I mean, think about how many people are around us, friends, family members, neighbors. I mean, I'm not talking about going out here and snatching somebody off the street. I'm talking about just somebody you know, somebody lives in your house with you or something. You know what I mean? Just think, they don't know what it feels like to be found. Just think of that. They don't know what it feels like to be found. And if they knew what it felt like to be found, that would be a tremendous reason to rejoice. And we can stay with just the same people rejoicing all the time about what it's like to be found, and we can forget why we're celebrating in the first place. That's just a little reminder, all right? Let's look at these last four questions just real quick. I promise you, real quick. All right. If we are to reflect what Jesus is, and I said Jesus is the man with 100 sheep. Jesus is the woman with the one coin lost. Jesus is the father with two sons. That's Jesus. And all of the illogical, unreasonable, abundant, overblown things that happen in these stories is the way the kingdom operates. That's the way Jesus said our lives are to be, our church is to be, our community is to be, our family, our lives are to be. This is the way God wants us to be. So what does that mean? What does that mean for us? Well, there are those four questions at the bottom of your handout for you. Number one, are we a church where what is lost is noticed, where one matters? That's what we are to be. We're to notice when something gets lost. Right? Now, think about this. I put lost on your page, and I know this might be a little confusing, so please listen to what I'm saying right now. I put the word lost on your page, and I put three words out there besides a soul being lost that represent some lostness in life. Look at it. Something is displaced. Do you have some things displaced in your life? You say, like what? Like your kids? They won't talk to you. You don't know where they are. You don't know what they're doing. They ran away. They don't love you. They don't call. They don't do anything. You feel displaced. You feel like they are lost. They're displaced. See, you can have lots of things that are lost, not just your soul. You can lose, you know, you can lose your feelings. You can lose your drive. You can lose your passion. You can lose your enthusiasm. You can lose your heart. You know, you can be damaged and beaten. You can lose your dignity and your, you know, I mean, there are lots of things that you can lose. Are we a church that notices when somebody loses something? And they need to be, and they need to be searched for. That's what we're, that's what this parable is saying. Man, notice lostness. And if we're going to be what Jesus said, we've got to be a church that notices when something is lost. That we can pick up on it, that we know you and we see you and we feel you and we sense you and we can tell something's wrong. What is it that's lost? And then second question, are we a church that will go to illogical lengths to love anyone? That means to search. Now I put those words go, seek, and extend. Those are just examples of what it means to search. I mean, are we willing to go to any length we need to in order to search for people that don't know that they can be found? Huh? I mean, are we willing to spend illogically? Are we willing to, you know, I mean, we're giving money to people over in Kosovo this year. Why are we doing that? We don't know anybody in Kosovo. We don't have, we'll in a minute. Well, we know a couple of people over there that are going. But I mean, why would we do that? You know, why, it doesn't make sense. They're not going to come to our church. They're not going to sit in our congregation. They're not going to send tithes in. They're not, I mean, what is it to gain? Well, what it is to gain is that we're willing to do whatever it takes to find those that are lost. Amen. That's what it means. That's what these parables are about. That's what Jesus is saying the kingdom of God is. Number three, are we a church where people feel found? Where people feel found, like they belong to a family. Are we a church that people can come into and not feel like they have to go through some examination process or dress a certain way or act a certain way or talk a certain way or be a certain way in order for us to say, all right, come on in, you meet our criteria. You belong, you. One of the great things that the New Testament asks, one of the great questions that the New Testament asks is, who belongs in the family of God? You know what Jesus' answer was to that question? Everybody. Everybody belongs in the family of God. And if everybody belongs in the family of God, then everybody belongs in the house of God. And they ought to be able to come into a house and feel like it's home. Feel like, man, I'm found, and these people care that I'm found, and these people love me. I'm found, and to feel welcomed and found, and not exclusive and isolated. I'm just asking the question. Number four, are we a church that freely celebrates each other? And I put the word affirm, celebrate. You know, build up, encourage, understand. To celebrate, listen. To celebrate somebody, you have to understand them. I mean, come on. Do we understand each other? You might be saying, no, we don't. Why don't you? Because you don't know them, right? That's why we have stuff, so that you can get to know them. Like Journey tonight. That's a good place to get to know somebody. Because you'll hear their heart. You'll hear some of them talk. You'll hear what's important. You'll see what's there in their life. Men's night. You come, you learn who these guys are, what they're all about, how they feel, what's going on in their life. You'll hear their prayer request and know what's important. Women's night, Friday night at the house with Tanya, come. You'll learn stuff about people so you can understand them, so that you can celebrate these people. Are we a church that freely can celebrate each other's victories, each other's conquerors and life? Let me tell you something about Wednesday night. Wednesday night we have prayer meeting at 6:30. I'm finished after this. At 6:30 on Wednesday, 6 o'clock on Wednesday, 6:30 on Wednesday night, we start prayer meeting. I'm here all the time, so it doesn't matter. 6:30 we start prayer meeting. And it lasts 30 minutes. And yeah. And when we come in, and there will be anywhere between 15 and 25 people roughly in here in a circle. And we'll sit down and we'll start talking. We'll start talking about, hey, what's going on in your life this week? Is there anything we need to pray with you about? Is there anything concerning you? Is there anything going on? Somebody you know? And what are we do? We just do like that. Everybody in there just talks and talks, and they share and they say, and you know what that is? That's us getting to know each other. That's us trying to understand each other. So that when something good happens, and it's so funny because it happens all the time in this prayer group, when somebody has something good that happens to them, they for sure tell us that it happened. Oh, yeah, you know, we were praying last week about blah, blah, blah. Let me tell you what happened. And then they'll tell us what happened. And it is so easy to rejoice and be happy for them. And you know why they tell us these things? Because they think we care about whether it happens or not. And you want to tell somebody that you think cares about you when good stuff happens in your life. Whenever your kids make straight A's or something great, what the first thing they do is run in the house. Mom, look at this. Dad, watch me, Dad. Watch me. Boy, that's some scary words to most parents, right? Because what's coming next... What's coming next is going to be dangerous, but they want you to watch them because they want you to say, that's great, son. Man, you are fantastic. That is unbelievable. How did you learn to do that? Celebrate them. Celebrate the victories of life. We got to have it. And Jesus says, that's why they come listen to me preach and don't come and listen to you. Right there. We're going to have fun with the rest of it. Believe me. All right, stand your feet.